No, but Rune was given an order to warn me to keep out of trouble the night of Maximus's murder. Maybe the old bastard knew something too. I'd suggest telling your people to watch him. See what he does and where he goes.
Gods,
Hunt breathed, striding past gawking pedestrians. You want me to just put a tail on the Autumn King like it's not a violation of about 10 different laws? Micah said to do whatever was necessary. The Autumn King has free rein to kill anyone found stalking him like that. Then you better tell your spies to keep themselves hidden. Hunt snapped his wings. Don't play games again. If you know something, tell me. I was going to tell you everything when I finished up at the nail salon this morning. She put her hands on her hips. But then you bit my head off.
Whatever, Quinlan. Don't do it again. You tell me before you make a move.
I'm getting real bored with you giving me orders and forbidding me to do things.
Whatever,
he said again. She rolled her eyes, but they'd reached her building. Neither bothered to say goodbye before Hunt leapt into the skies, aiming for the adjacent roof, a phone already at his ear. Bryce rode the elevator up to her floor, mulling everything over in the silence. She'd meant what she said to Hunt. She didn't think her father was behind Danica's and the pack's deaths. She had little doubt he'd killed others, though, and would do anything to keep his crown. The Autumn King was a courtesy title in addition to her father's role as a city head, as for all the seven Fey Kings. No kingdom was truly their own. Even of Avalon, the Green Isle ruled by the Stag King, still bowed to the Republic. The Fae had coexisted with the Republic since its founding, answerable to its laws, but ultimately left to govern themselves and retain their ancient titles of kings and princes and the like. Still respected by all, and feared. Not as much as the angels, with their destructive, hideous storm and sky powers, but they could inflict pain if they wished. Choke the air from your lungs, or freeze you or burn you from the inside out. Solas knew Rune and his two friends could raise hell when provoked. But she wasn't looking to raise hell tonight. She was looking to quietly slip into its Midgard equivalent. Which was precisely why she waited 30 minutes, before tucking a knife into her black leather ankle boots and placed something that packed a bigger punch into the back of her dark jeans, hidden beneath her leather jacket. She kept the lights and television on, the curtains partially closed, just enough to block Hunt's view of her front door as she left. Sneaking out the rear stairwell of her building to the small alley where her scooter was chained, Bryce took a swift, bracing breath before fitting on her helmet. Traffic wasn't moving as she unchained the ivory Firebright 3500 scooter from the alley lamppost and waddled it onto the cobblestones. She waited for other scooters, pedicabs, and motorcycles to zip past, then launched into the flow, the world stark through the visor of her helmet. Her mother still complained about the scooter, begging her to use a car until after the drop. But Randall had always insisted Bryce was fine. Of course, she never told them of the various incidents on this scooter. But her mother had a mortal lifespan. Bryce didn't need to shave off any more years than necessary. Bryce cruised down one of the city's main arteries, losing herself in the rhythm of weaving between cars and swerving around pedestrians. The world was a blur of golden light and deep shadows, neon glaring above, all of it accented by pops and flittering shimmers of street magic. Even the little bridges she crossed, spanning the countless tributaries to the Istros, were strung with sparkling lights that danced on the dim, drifting water below. High above Main Street, a silvery sheen filled the night sky, limning the drifting clouds where the Malachim partied and dined. Only a flare of red interrupted the pale glow, courtesy of Redner Industries' massive sign atop their skyscraper in the heart of the district. Few people walked the streets of the CBD at this hour, and Bryce made sure to get through its canyons of high-rises as swiftly as possible. She knew she'd entered the meat market not by any street or marker, but by the shift in the darkness. No lights stained the skies above the low brick buildings crammed together. And here the shadows became permanent, tucked into alleys and under cars, the street lamps mostly shattered and never repaired. Bryce pulled down a cramped street, where a few dented delivery trucks were in the process of unloading boxes of spiky green fruit, and crates of crustacean-looking creatures that seemed far too aware of their captivity, and oncoming demise via boiling pots of water in one of the food stalls. Bryce tried not to meet their googly black eyes pleading with her through the wooden bars, as she parked a few feet away from a nondescript warehouse, removed her helmet, and waited. Vendors and shoppers alike eyed her to glean if she was selling or for sale. In the warrens below, carved deep into Midgard's womb, lay three different levels just for flesh. Mostly human, mostly living, though she'd heard of some places that specialized in certain tastes. Every fetish could be bought. No taboo was too foul. Half-breeds were prized. They could heal faster and better than full humans, a smarter long-term investment. And occasional Vanir were enslaved and bound with so many enchantments that they had no hope of escape. Only the wealthiest could afford to purchase a few hours with them. Bryce checked the time on her scooter's dash clock. Crossing her arms, she leaned against the black leather seat. The Umbra Mortis slammed to the ground, cracking the cobblestones in a rippling circle. Hunt's eyes practically glowed, as he said, in full view of those cowering along the street. I am going to kill you.
Chapter 18.
Hunt stormed toward Bryce, stepping over the cobblestones fragmented from his landing. He'd detected her lilac and nutmeg scent on the wind the moment she'd stepped outside the back door of her building, and when he'd discovered where precisely she was driving on that scooter. Bryce had the nerve to push back the sleeve of her leather jacket, frown at her bare wrist as if she were reading a goddamned watch, and say,
You're 2 minutes late.
He was going to throttle her. Someone should have done it a long fucking time ago. Bryce smiled in a way that said she'd like to see him try, and sauntered toward him, scooter and helmet left behind. Unbelievable. Un-fucking-believable. Hunt growled. There's no way that scooter is there when we get back. Bryce batted her eyelashes, fluffing out her helmet hair.
Good thing you've made such a big entrance. No one would dare touch it now, not with the Umbra Mortis as my wrathful companion.
Indeed, people shrank from his gaze, some stepping behind the stacked crates, as Bryce aimed for one of the open doors into the labyrinth of subterraneanly interconnected warehouses that made up the blocks of the district. Even Micah didn't station legionaries here. The meat market had its own laws and methods of enforcing them. Hunt ground out. I told you that there are protocols to follow if we want to stand a chance of contacting the Viper Queen.
I'm not here to contact the Viper Queen.
What? The Viper Queen had ruled the meat market for longer than anyone could remember. Hunt made a point, all the angels, whether civilians or legionaries, made a point, of staying the fuck away from the Serpentine Shifter, whose snake form, rumor claimed, was a true horror to behold. Before Bryce could answer, Hunt said, I'm growing tired of this bullshit, Quinlan. She bared her teeth.
I'm sorry, she seethed, if your fragile ego can't handle that I know what I'm fucking doing.
Hunt opened and closed his mouth. Fine. He'd misjudged her earlier today, but she hadn't exactly given him any hint of being remotely interested in this investigation, or that she wasn't trying to hinder it. Bryce continued through the open doors to the warehouse without saying another word. Being in the 33rd, or any legion, was as good as putting a target on your back, and Hunt checked that his weapons were still in place in the cleverly constructed sheaths along his suit as he followed her. The reek of bodies and smoke coated his face like oil. Hunt tucked in his wings tightly. Whatever fear he'd instilled in people on the streets was of no consequence inside the market, packed with ramshackle stalls and vendors and food stands, smoke drifting throughout, the tang of blood and spark of magic acrid in his nostrils. And above it all, against the far wall of the enormous space, was a towering mosaic, the tiles taken from an ancient temple in Pangaea, restored and recreated here in loving detail, despite its gruesome depiction. Cloaked and hooded death, the skeleton's face grinning out from the crowd, a scythe in one hand and an hourglass in the other. Above its head, words had been crafted in the Republic's most ancient language. Memento mori. Remember that you will die. It was meant to be an invitation for merriment, to seize each moment as if it were one's last, as if tomorrow were not guaranteed, even for slow-aging Veneer. Remember that you will die, and enjoy each pleasure the world has to offer. Remember that you will die, and none of this illegal shit will matter anyway. Remember that you will die. So who cares how many people suffer from your actions? Bryce swept past it, her swaying hair shining like the heart of a ruby. The lights illuminated the worn black leather of her jacket, bringing into stark relief the painted words along the back in feminine, colorful script. It was instinct to translate, also from the ancient language, as if Erd herself had chosen this moment to lay the two ancient phrases before him. Through love, all is possible. Such a pretty phrase was a fucking joke in a place like this. Glimmering eyes that tracked Quinlan from the stalls and shadows quickly looked away when they noticed him at her side. It was an effort not to haul her out of this shithole. Even though he wanted this case solved, having only 10 beautiful kills standing between him and freedom, coming here was a colossal risk. What was the use of his freedom if he was left in a dumpster behind one of these warehouses? Maybe that was what she wanted, to lure him here, use the meat market itself to kill him. It seemed unlikely, but he kept one eye on her. Bryce knew her way around, knew a few of the vendors from the nods they exchanged. Hunt marked each one. A metal worker specializing in intricate little mechanisms, a fruit vendor with exotic produce for sale, an owl-faced female who had a spread of scrolls and books bound in materials that were everything but cow leather. The metalworker helps me identify if an artifact is a fake, Bryce said under her breath, as they wound through the steam and smoke of a food pit. How she'd noticed his observing, he had no idea. And the fruit lady gets shipments of durian in the early spring and fall, Syrinx's favorite food. Stinks up the whole house, but he goes nuts for it. She edged around a garbage pail near overflowing with discarded plates and bones and soiled napkins before ascending a rickety set of stairs to the mezzanine flanking either side of the warehouse floor, doors stationed every few feet. The books? Hunt couldn't help asking. She seemed to be counting doors rather than looking at numbers. There were no numbers, he realized. The books, Bryce said, are a story for another time. She paused outside a pea-green door, chipped and deeply gouged in spots. Hunt sniffed, trying to detect what lay beyond. Nothing, as far as he could detect. He subtly braced himself, keeping his hands within range of his weapons. Bryce opened the door, not bothering to knock, revealing flickering candles and brine. Salt. Smoke and something that dried out his eyes. Bryce stalked down the cramped hallway to the open, rotting sitting room beyond. Scowling, he shut the door and followed, wings tucked in to keep from brushing the oily, crumbling walls. If Quinlan died, Micah's offer would be off the table. White and ivory candles guttered as Bryce walked onto the worn green carpet, and Hunt held in his cringe. A sagging, ripped couch was shoved against a wall. A filthy leather armchair with half its stuffing bursting from it sat against the other. And around the room, on tables and stacks of books and half-broken chairs, were jars and bowls and cups full of salt. White salt, black salt, gray salt, in grains of every size, from near powder to flakes to great rough hunks of it. Salts for protection against darker powers, against demons. Many Vanir built their houses with slabs of salt at the cornerstones. Rumor claimed that the entire base of the Asteri's crystal palace was a slab of salt, that it had been built atop a natural deposit. Fucking hell. He'd never seen such an assortment. As Bryce peered down the darkened hall to the left, where the shadows yielded three doors, Hunt hissed, "Please tell me."
"Just keep your snarling and eye-rolling to yourself," she snapped at him, and called into the gloom, "I'm here to buy, not collect."
One of the doors cracked open, and a pale-skinned, dark-haired satyr hobbled toward them, his furred legs hidden by trousers. His pageboy hat must have hid little curling horns. The clopping of the hooves gave him away. The male barely came up to Bryce's chest, his shrunken, twisted body half the size of the bulls that Hunt had witnessed tearing people into shreds on battlefields, and that he had faced himself in Sandriel's arena. The male's slitted pupils, knobbed at either side like a goat's, expanded. Fear. And not at Hunt's presence, he realized with a jolt. Bryce dipped her fingers into a lead bowl of pink salt, plucking up a few pieces and letting them drop into the dish with faint, hollow cracks.
"I need the obsidian."
The satyr shifted, hooves clopping faintly, rubbing his hairy, pale neck. "Don't deal in that." She smiled slightly.
"Oh?"
She went over to another bowl, stirring the powder-fine black salt in there.
"Grade A, whole rock obsidian salt, 7 pounds, 7 ounces.
Now." The male's throat bobbed. "It's illegal."
"Are you quoting the motto of the meat market, or trying to tell me that you somehow don't have precisely what I need?"
Hunt scanned the room. White salt for purification, pink for protection, gray for spell work, red for... he forgot what the hell red was for. But obsidian. Shit. Hunt fell back on centuries of training to keep the shock off his face. Black salts were used for summoning demons directly, bypassing the Northern Rift entirely, or for various dark spell work. A salt that went beyond black? A salt like the obsidian? It could summon something big. Hell was severed from them by time and space, but still accessible through the twin-sealed portals at the North and South Poles, the Northern Rift and the Southern Rift, respectively. Or by idiots who tried to summon demons through salts of varying powers. A lot of fucked up shit, Hunt had always thought. The benefit of using salts, at least, was that only one demon could be summoned at a time. Though, if things went badly, the summoner could wind up dead. And a demon could wind up stuck in Midgard, hungry. It was why the creeps existed in their world at all. Most had been hunted after those long-ago wars between realms. But every so often, demons got loose. Reproduced, usually by force. The result of those horrible unions? The Demonaki. Most walking the streets were diluted, weaker incarnations and hybrids of the purebred demons in hell. Many were pariahs, though no fault of their own beyond genetics, and they usually worked hard to integrate into the Republic. But the lowest-level purebred demon fresh out of hell could bring an entire city to a standstill as it went on a rampage. And for centuries now, Hunt had been tasked with tracking them down. This satyr had to be a big-time dealer, then, if he peddled obsidian salt. Bryce took a step toward the satyr. The male retreated. Her amber eyes gleamed with feral amusement, no doubt from her fae-side. A far cry from the party girl getting her nails done. Hunt tensed. She couldn't be that foolish, could she? To show him that she knew how to and could easily acquire the same type of salt that had probably been used to summon the demon that killed Tertian and Danica? Another tally scratched itself into the suspect column in his mind. Bryce shrugged with one shoulder.
"I could call your queen, see what she makes of it."
You don't have the rank to summon her.
No, Bryce said. I don't. But I bet if I go down to the main floor and start screaming for the Viper Queen, she'll drag herself out of that fighting pit to see what the fuss is about.
Burning Solas. She was serious, wasn't she?
Sweat beaded the satyr's brow.
Obsidian's too dangerous. I can't in good conscience sell it.
Bryce crooned.
Did you say that when you sold it to Philip Briggs for his bonds?
Hunt stilled, and the male went a sickly white. He glanced to Hunt, noting the tattoo across his brow, the armor he wore.
I don't know what you're talking about. I was cleared by the investigators. I never sold Briggs anything.
I'm sure he paid you in cash to hide the money trail, Bryce said.
She yawned.
Look, I'm tired and hungry, and I don't feel like playing this game. Name your price so I can be on my way.
Those goat-like eyes snapped to hers.
50,000 gold marks.
Bryce smiled as Hunt held in his curse.
Do you know my boss paid 50,000 to watch a pack of hellhounds rip apart a satyr? Said it was the best minute of her miserable life.
45.
Don't waste my time with nonsense offers.
I won't go below 30, not for that much obsidian.
10.
10,000 gold marks was still outrageous, but summoning salts were extraordinarily valuable. How many demons had he hunted because of them? How many dismembered bodies had he seen from summonings gone wrong? Or right, if it was a targeted attack. Bryce held up her phone.
In 5 minutes, I'm expected to call Jessica and say that the obsidian salt is in my possession. In 6 minutes, if I do not make that phone call, someone will knock on that door. And it will not be someone for me.
Hunt honestly couldn't tell if Quinlan was bluffing. She likely wouldn't have told him. Could have gotten that order from her boss while he was sitting on the roof. If Jessica Roga was dealing with whatever shit the obsidian implied, either for her own uses or on behalf of the Underking, maybe Bryce hadn't committed the murder, but rather abetted it.
4 minutes, Bryce said.
Sweat slid down the satyr's temple and into his thick beard.
Silence.
Despite his suspicions, Hunt had the creeping feeling that this assignment was either going to be a fuck ton of fun or a nightmare. If it got him to his end goal, he didn't care one way or another. Bryce perched on the rotting arm of the chair and began typing into her phone, no more than a bored young woman avoiding social interaction. The satyr whirled toward Hunt.
You're the Umbra Mortis.
He swallowed audibly.
You're one of the Triari. You protect us. You serve the governor.
Before Hunt could reply, Bryce lifted her phone to show him a photo of two fat roly-poly puppies.
Look what my cousin just adopted, she told him. That one is Osiris, and the one on the right is Set.
She lowered the phone before he could come up with a response, thumbs flying. But she glanced at Hunt from under her thick lashes.
Play along, please, she seemed to say.
So Hunt said,
cute dogs.
The satyr let out a small whine of distress. Bryce lifted her head, curtain of red hair limned with silver in her screen's light.
I thought you'd be running to get the salt by now. Maybe you should, considering you've got,
a glance at the phone, fingers flying,
90 seconds.
She opened what looked like a message thread and began typing. The satyr whispered,
20,000.
She held up a finger.
I'm writing back to my cousin. Give me 2 seconds.
The satyr was trembling enough that Hunt almost felt bad. Almost. Until...
10, damn you, 10!
Bryce smiled.
No need to shout, she purred,
pressing a button that had her phone ringing.
Yes.
The sorceress picked up after the first ring.
Call off your dogs.
A breathy feminine laugh.
Done.
Bryce lowered the phone.
Well?
The satyr rushed to the back, hooves thumping on the worn floors, and procured a warped bundle a moment later.
It reeked of mold and dirt. Bryce lifted a brow. Put it in a bag.
I don't have a...
Bryce gave him a look. The satyr found one. A stained, reusable grocery bag, but better than holding the slab in public.
Bryce weighed the salt in her hands.
It's 2 ounces over.
It's 7 and 7, just what you asked for. It's all cut to sevens.
7.
The holy number. Or unholy, depending on who was worshipping. 7 Asteri, 7 hills in their eternal city, 7 neighborhoods and 7 gates in Crescent City, 7 planets and 7 circles in hell, with 7 princes who ruled them, each darker than the last.
Bryce inclined her head. If I measure it and it's not...
It is, the satyr cried. Dark hell, it is!
Bryce tapped some buttons on her phone. 10 grand, transferred right to you.
Hunt kept at her back as she strode out, the satyr half-seething, half-trembling behind them. She opened the door, grinning to herself, and Hunt was about to start demanding answers when she halted, when he also beheld who stood outside. The tall, moon-skinned woman was dressed in a gold jumpsuit, emerald hoop earrings hanging lower than her chin-length black bob. Her full lips were painted in purple so dark it was nearly black, and her remarkable green eyes. Hunt knew her by the eyes alone, humanoid in every aspect but for them. Green entirely, marbled with veins of jade and gold, interrupted only by a slitted pupil now razor-thin in the warehouse lights, a snake's eyes. Or a viper queen's.
Chapter 19. Bryce shouldered the canvas bag, surveying the Viper Queen. Nice outfit. The serpentine shifter smiled, revealing bright white teeth, and canines that were slightly too elongated and slightly too thin. Nice bodyguard.
Bryce shrugged as those snake's eyes dragged over every inch of Hunt.
Nothing going on upstairs, but everything happening where it counts.
Hunt stiffened, but the female's purple lips curved upward.
I've never heard Hunt Athalar described that way, but I'm sure the general appreciates it.
At the near-forgotten title, Hunt's jaw tightened. Yes, the Viper Queen had likely been alive during the fall, would have known Hunt not as one of the 33rd's Triari or the Shadow of Death, but as General Hunt Athalar, High commander of all the Archangel Shahar's legions. And Bryce had strung him along for 2 days. She glanced over a shoulder, finding Hunt assessing the Viper Queen and the 4 Fey males flanking her. Defectors from her father's court, trained assassins in not just weapons, but the Queen's specialty, venoms and poisons. None of them deigned to acknowledge her. The Viper Queen tilted her head to the side, the razor-sharp bob shifting like black silk. On the ground below, patrons milled about, unaware that their ruler had graced them with her presence.
Looks like you were doing some shopping.
Bryce gave a half-shrug.
Bargain hunting is a hobby. Your realm is the best place for it. I thought your boss paid you too well for you to stoop to cutting costs and using salts.
Bryce forced herself to smile, to keep her heartbeat steady, knowing full well the female could pick up on it, could taste fear, could likely taste what variety of salt exactly sat in the bag dangling from her shoulder.
Just because I make money doesn't mean I have to get ripped off.
The Viper Queen glanced between her and Hunt.
I heard you two have been spotted around town together.
Hunt growled, it's classified. The Viper Queen arched a well-groomed black eyebrow, the small beauty mark just beneath the outer corner of her eye shifting with the movement. Her gold-painted nails glinted as she reached a hand into the pocket of her jumpsuit, fishing out a lighter encrusted with rubies forming the shape of a striking asp. A cigarette appeared between her purple lips a moment later, and they watched in silence, her guards monitoring every breath they made as she lit up and inhaled deeply. Smoke rippled from those dark lips as she said, "Shit's getting interesting these days." Bryce pivoted toward the exit.
"Yep, let's go, Hunt."
One of the guards stepped in front of her, 6.5 feet of fey grace and muscle. Bryce stopped short, Hunt nearly slamming into her, his growl likely his first and last warning to the male. But the guard merely gazed at his queen, vacant and beholden, likely addicted to the venom she secreted and doled out to her inner circle. Bryce looked over her shoulder at the Viper Queen, still leaning against the rail, still smoking that cigarette.
"It's a good time for business,"
the Queen observed,
"when key players converge for the summit. So many ruling class elites, all with their own interests."
Hunt was close enough to Bryce's back that she could feel the tremor that ran through his powerful body. Could have sworn lightning tingled over her spine, but he said nothing. The Viper Queen merely extended a hand to the walkway behind her, gold nails flashing in the light.
"My office, if you will."
"No," Hunt said, "we're going." Bryce stepped closer to the Viper Queen.
"Lead the way, Majesty."
She did. Hunt was bristling at her side, but Bryce kept her eyes on the swaying, glossy bob of the female ahead of them. Her guards kept a few feet behind, far enough away that Hunt deemed it safe to mutter,
"This is a terrible idea."
"You were bitching this morning that I wasn't doing anything of value,"
Bryce muttered back, as they trailed the Viper Queen through an archway and down a back set of stairs. From below, roaring and cheers rose to meet them.
"And now that I am doing something, you're bitching about it too,"
she snorted.
"Get your shit together, Athalar."
His jaw tightened again, but he glanced back at her bag, the block of salt weighing it down.
"You bought the salt because you knew it'd attract her attention."
"You told me that it'd take weeks to get a meeting with her. I decided to bypass all the bullshit."
She tapped the bag, the salt thumping hollowly beneath her hand.
"Cathona's tits,"
he muttered, shaking his head. They exited the stairwell a level down, the walls solid concrete. Behind them, the roar of the fighting pit echoed down the corridor. But the Viper Queen glided ahead, passing rusty metal doors, until she opened an unmarked one and swept in without so much as looking back. Bryce couldn't help her smug smile.
"Don't look so fucking satisfied," Hunt hissed. "We might not even walk out of this place alive."
"True. I'll ask the questions."
"No."
They glowered at each other, and Bryce could have sworn lightning forked across his eyes. But they'd reached the door, which opened into... She'd been expecting the plush opulence of Griffin Antiquities hidden behind that door. Gilded mirrors and velvet divans and silk drapes and a carved oak desk as old as this city. Not this mess. It was barely better than the stockroom of a dive bar. A dented metal desk occupied most of the cramped space, a scratched purple chair behind it, tufts of stuffing poking out of the upper corner, and the pale green paint peeled off the wall in half a dozen spots, not to mention the water stain gracing the ceiling, made worse by the thrumming fluorescent first lights. Against one wall stood an open shelving unit, filled with everything from files to crates of liquor to discarded guns. On the opposite, stacked cardboard boxes rose above her head. One glance at Hunt, and Bryce knew he was thinking the same. The Viper Queen, mistress of the underworld, feared poisons expert and ruler of the meat market, claimed this hovel as an office? The female slid into the chair, interlacing her fingers atop the mess of papers strewn across the desk.
A computer that was about 20 years out of date sat like a fat rock before her. A little statue of Luna poised atop it, the goddess's bow aimed at the shifter's face. One of her guards shut the door, prompting Hunt's hand to slide toward his hip. But Bryce had already taken a seat in one of the cheap aluminum chairs. Not as fancy as your boss's place, the Viper Queen said, reading the disbelief on Bryce's face. But it does the trick. Bryce didn't bother agreeing that the space was far from anything befitting a serpentine shifter, whose snake form was a moon-white cobra with scales that gleamed like opals, and whose power was rumored to be different. Something extra that mixed with her venom. Something strange and old. Hunt took a seat beside her, twisting the chair frontward to accommodate his wings. Roaring from the fire pit rumbled through the concrete floor beneath their feet. The Viper Queen lit another cigarette. You're here to ask about Danica Fenzir. Bryce kept her face neutral. To his credit, Athalar did too. Hunt said carefully, We're trying to get a clearer picture of everything. Her remarkable eyes narrowed with pleasure. If that's what you want to claim, then sure. Smoke rippled from her lips. I'll spare you the bullshit, though. Danica was a threat to me, and in more ways than perhaps you know. But she was smart. Our relationship was a working one. Another inhale. I'm sure Athalar can back me up on this. She drawled, earning a warring glare from him. But to get shit done, sometimes the Ox and 33rd have to work with those of us who dwell in the shadows. Hunt said, and Maximus Tertian? He was killed on the outskirts of your territory. Maximus Tertian was a spoiled little bitch, but I would never be stupid enough to pick a fight with his father like that. I'd only stand to gain a headache.
Who killed him? Bryce asked. I heard you pulled in your people. You know something.
Just a precaution.
She flicked her tongue over her bottom teeth.
Us serps can taste when shit is about to go down, like a charge in the air. I can taste it now, all over this city.
Hunt's lightning grumbled in the room. You didn't think to warn anyone?
I warned my people. As long as trouble doesn't pass through my district, I don't care what goes on in the rest of Lunathian.
Hunt said, real noble of you. Bryce asked again,
who do you think killed Tertian?
She shrugged.
Honestly, it's the meat market. Shit happens. He was probably coming here for drugs, and this is the price he paid.
What kind of drugs?
Bryce asked, but Hunt said, toxicology report says there were no drugs in his system.
Then I can't help you,
the shifter said.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Bryce didn't bother to ask about camera footage, not when the 33rd would have already combed through it. The Viper Queen pulled something from a drawer and chucked it on the desk. A flash drive.
My alibis from the night Tertian was killed, and from the days before and during Danica and her pack's murders.
Bryce didn't touch the tiny metal drive, no bigger than a lipstick tube. The Viper Queen's lips curved again,
I was at the spa the night of Tertian's murder. And as for Danica and the pack of devils, one of my associates threw a drop party for his daughter that night. Turned into 3 days of, well, you'll see.
This drive contains footage of you at a 3-day orgy? Hunt demanded.
Let me know if it gets you hot and bothered, Athalar.
The Viper Queen took another hit of the cigarette. Her green eyes drifted toward his lap.
I hear you're one hell of a ride when you pause the brooding long enough.
Oh, please. Hunt's teeth flashed as he bared them in a silent snarl. So Bryce said,
Orgy and Hunt's bedroom prowess aside, you've got a salt vendor in this market.
She tapped the bag balanced on her knees. The Viper Queen tore her eyes from a still snarling Hunt and said sharply to Bryce,
I don't use what I sell. Though I don't think you live by that rule over at your fancy gallery.
She winked.
You ever get sick of crawling for that sorceress? Come find me. I have a stable of clients who'd crawl for you and pay to do it.
Hunt's hand was warm on her shoulder. She's not for sale. Bryce leaned out of his grip, throwing him a warning glare. The Viper Queen said,
Everyone, General, is for sale. You just have to figure out the asking price.
Smoke flared from her nostrils, a dragon huffing flames.
Give me a day or two, Athalar, and I'll figure out yours.
Hunt's smile was a thing of deadly beauty. Maybe I figured out yours already. The Viper Queen smiled.
I certainly hope so.
She stubbed out the cigarette and met Bryce's stare.
Here's a pro tip for your little investigation.
Bryce stiffened at the cool mockery.
Look toward where it hurts the most. That's always where the answers are.
Thanks for the advice, Bryce gritted out. The shifter merely snapped her gold-tipped fingers. The office door opened, those venom-addicted females peering in.
They're done,
the Viper Queen said, turning on her antique of a computer.
Make sure they get outside.
And don't go poking about. Bryce shouldered the block of salt as Hunt snatched up the flash drive, pocketing it. The guard was smart enough to step away as Hunt nudged Bryce through the door. Bryce made it 3 steps before the Viper Queen said,
Don't underestimate the obsidian salt, Quinlan. It can bring over the very worst of hell.
A chill snaked down her spine. But Bryce merely lifted a hand in an over-the-shoulder wave as she entered the hall.
Well, at least I'll be entertained, won't I?
They left the meat market in one piece, thank the 5 fucking gods, especially Erd herself. Hunt wasn't entirely sure how they'd managed to walk away from the Viper Queen without their guts pumped full of poisoned bullets, but he frowned at the red-haired woman now inspecting her white scooter for damage. Even the helmet had been left untouched. Hunt said,
I believe her.
No way in hell was he watching the video on that flash drive. He'd be sending it right over to Victoria.
I don't think she had anything to do with this.
Quinlan and Roga, however, he hadn't yet crossed them off his mental list. Bryce tucked the helmet into the crook of her arm.
I agree.
So, that brings us back to square one. He suppressed the urge to pace, picturing his kill count still in the thousands.
No,
Bryce countered. It doesn't. She fastened the bag of salt into the small compartment on the back of her scooter. She said to look where it hurts most for answers. She was just spewing some bullshit to mess with us.
Probably, Bryce said, fitting the helmet over her head before flicking up the visor to reveal those amber eyes. But maybe she was unintentionally right.
Tomorrow.
Her eyes shuddered. I've got to do some thinking tomorrow. At the gallery, or else Jezebel will throw a fit.
He was intrigued enough that he said, You think you have a lead?
Not yet. A general direction, though, it's better than nothing.
He jerked his chin toward the compartment of her scooter. What's the obsidian salt for? She had to have another purpose for it, even if he prayed she wasn't dumb enough to use it. Bryce just said blandly,
Seasoning my burgers.
Fine, he'd walked into that. How'd you afford the salt anyway? He doubted she had 10 grand just sitting around in her bank account. Bryce zipped up her leather jacket.
I put it on Jessica's account. She spends more money on beauty products in a month, so I doubt she'll notice.
Hunt had no idea how to even respond to any of that, so he gritted his teeth and surveyed her atop her ride. You know, even a scooter is a dumb fucking thing to drive before making the drop.
Thanks, Mom.
You should take the bus. She just let out a barking laugh and zoomed off into the night.
Chapter 20
Look toward where it hurts the most.
Bryce had refrained from telling Athalar how accurate the Viper Queen's tip had been. She'd already given him her list of suspects, but he hadn't asked about the other demand he'd made. So that's what she'd decided to do, compile a list of every one of Danica's movements from the week before her death. But the moment she'd finished opening up the gallery for the day, the moment she'd come down to the library to make the list, nausea had hit her. She turned on her laptop instead, and began combing through her emails with Maximus Tertian, dating back 6 weeks. Perhaps she'd find some sort of connection there, or at least a hint of his plans for that night. Yet with each professional, bland email she reread, the memories from Danica's last days clawed at the welded shut door of her mind. Like looming specters, they hissed and whispered, and she tried to ignore them, tried to focus on Tertian's emails, but... Lahaba looked over from where she'd sprawled on the tiny fainting couch Bryce had given her years ago, courtesy of a dollhouse from her childhood, watching her favorite veneer drama on her tablet. Her glass dome sat behind her atop a stack of books, the plumes of a purple orchid arching over it.
You could let the angel down here and work together on whatever is causing you such difficulty.
Bryce rolled her eyes.
Your fascination with Athalar is taking on stalkerish levels.
Lahaba sighed.
Do you know what Hunt Athalar looks like?
Considering that he's living on the roof across from my apartment, I'd say yes. Lahaba hit pause on her show, leaning her head against the backrest of her little fainting couch.
He's dreamy.
Yeah, just ask him. Bryce clicked out of the email she'd been reading, one of about 100 between her and Tertian, and the first where he'd been mildly flirty with her.
Hunt's handsome enough to be on this show.
Lahaba pointed with a dainty toe toward the tablet propped before her. Unfortunately, I don't think the size differences between you and Athalar would work in the bedroom.
You're barely big enough to wrap your arms around his dick.
Smoke swirled around Lahaba at her puff of embarrassment, and the sprite waved her little hands to clear it away.
Bibi!
Bryce chuckled, then she gestured to the tablet.
I'm not the one who's binging a show that's basically porn with a plot.
What's it called again? Fangs and Bangs? Lahaba turned purple.
It's not called that, and you know it. And it's artistic. They make love. They don't...
She choked. Fuck, Bryce suggested dryly.
Exactly,
Lahaba said with a prim nod. Bryce laughed, letting it chase away the swarming ghosts of the past. And the sprite, despite her prudishness, joined her. Bryce said, I doubt Hunt Athalar is the making love type.
Mahaba hid her face behind her hands, humming with mortification. Just to torture her a bit more, Bryce added,
"He's the type to bend you over a desk," and the phone rang.
She glanced at the ceiling, wondering if Athalar had somehow heard, but no, it was worse.
"Hi, Jessaba," she said,
motioning Lahaba back to her guardian's perch in case the sorceress was monitoring through the library's cameras.
"Bryce, glad to see Lahaba is hard at work."
Lahaba quickly shut down the tablet and did her best to look alert. Bryce said,
"It was her mid-morning break. She's entitled to one."
Lahaba threw her a grateful glance that cut right to the bone. Jessica just began rattling off commands. 30 minutes later, at the desk in the gallery showroom, Bryce stared toward the shut front door. The ticking of the clock filled the space, a steady reminder of each second lost. Each second that Danica and the Pax killer roamed the streets while she sat in here, checking bullshit paperwork. Unacceptable. Yet the thought of prying open the door to those memories. She knew she'd regret it, knew it was probably 10 kinds of stupid, but she dialed the number before she could second-guess it. "What's wrong?" Hunt's voice was already sharp, full of storms.
"Why do you assume something's wrong?"
"Because you've never called me before, Quinlan." This was stupid, really fucking stupid. She cleared her throat to make up some excuse about ordering food for lunch, but he said, "You found something?"
For Danica, for the pack of devils, she could do this, would do this. Pride had no place here. "I need you to help me with something."
"With what?" But before his words finished sounding, a fist banged on the door. She knew it was him without pulling up the camera feed. She opened the door, getting a face full of wings and rain-kissed cedar. Hunt asked Riley, "Are you gonna give me some shit about coming in, or can we spare ourselves that song and dance?"
"Just get inside."
Bryce left Hunt in the doorway and walked to her desk, where she hauled open the bottom drawer to yank out a reusable bottle. She drank straight from it. Hunt shut the door after himself. "A little early to be drinking, isn't it?" She didn't bother to correct him, just took another sip and slid into her chair. He eyed her. "You gonna tell me what this is about?" A polite but insistent thump, thump, thump came from the iron door down to the library. Hunt's wings snapped shut as he turned his head toward the heavy metal slab. Another tap, tap, tap filled the showroom atrium.
"Bibi,"
Lahaba said mournfully through the door.
"Bibi, are you all right?"
Bryce rolled her eyes.
"Kathona, spare her."
Hunt asked too casually. "Who is that?" A third little knock, knock, knock.
"Bibi, Bibi, please say you're all right."
"I'm fine," Bryce called. "Go back downstairs and do your job."
"I want to see you with my own eyes,"
Lahaba said, sounding for all the world like a concerned aunt.
"I can't focus on my work until then."
Hunt's brows twitched toward each other, even as his lips tugged outward. Bryce said to him, "One, hyperbole is an art form for her."
"Oh, Bibi, you can be so terribly cruel."
"Two, very few people are allowed downstairs. So if you report to Micah about it, we're done."
"I promise," Hunt said warily, "though Micah can make me talk if he insists."
"Then don't give him a reason to be curious about it."
She set the bottle on her desk and found her legs were surprisingly sturdy. Hunt still towered over her. The horrible twining thorns tattooed across his brow seemed to suck the light from the room. But Hunt rubbed his jaw.
"A lot of the stuff down there is contraband, isn't it?"
"Surely you've realized most of the shit in here is contraband. Some of these books and scrolls are the last known copies in existence."
She pursed her lips, then added quietly,
"A lot of people suffered and died to preserve what's in the library downstairs."
More than that, she wouldn't say. She hadn't been able to read most of the books, since they were in long-dead languages or in codes so clever only highly trained linguists or historians might decipher them. But she'd finally learned last year what most of them were. Knew the Asteri and the Senate would order them destroyed. Had destroyed all other copies. There were normal books in there, too, which Jessica acquired mostly for her own uses, possibly even for the Underking. But the ones that Lahaba guarded? Those were the ones people would kill for, had killed for. Hunt nodded.
I won't breathe a word.
She assessed him for a moment, then turned to the iron door.
Consider this your birthday present, Lily, she muttered through the metal. The iron door opened on a sigh, revealing the pine-green carpeted staircase that led straight down into the library.
Hunt almost crashed into her as Lahaba floated up between them, her fire shining bright, and purred,
Hello.
The angel examined the fire sprite hovering a foot away from his face. She was no longer than Bryce's hand, her flaming hair twirling above her head.
Well, aren't you beautiful?
Hunt said, his voice low and soft in a way that made every instinct in Bryce sit up straight. Lahaba flared as she wrapped her plump arms around herself and ducked her head. Bryce shook off the effects of Hunt's voice.
Stop pretending to be shy.
Lahaba cut her a simmering glare, but Hunt lifted a finger for her to perch on.
Shall we?
Lahaba shone ruby red, but floated over to his scarred finger and sat, smiling at him beneath her lashes.
He is very nice, Bibi.
Lahaba observed as Bryce walked down the stairs, the sun chandelier blinking to life again.
I don't see why you complain so much about him.
Bryce scowled over her shoulder, but Lahaba was making mooncalf eyes at the angel, who gave Bryce a wry smile as he trailed her into the library's heart. Bryce looked ahead quickly. Maybe Lahaba had a point about Athalar's looks. Bryce was aware of every step downward, every rustle of Hunt's wings mere steps behind her, every bit of air that he filled with his breath, his power, his will. Other than Jessica, Syrinx, and Lahaba, only Danica had been down here with her before. Syrinx stirred enough from his nap to see that they had a guest, and his little lion's tail whacked against the velvet sofa.
Ciri says you can brush him now,
Lahaba told Hunt. Hunt is busy, Bryce said, heading for the table where she'd left the book open.
Ciri talks, does he?
According to her, he does, Bryce muttered, scanning the table for... Right, she'd put the list on Lahaba's table. She aimed for it, heels sinking deep into the carpet.
There must be thousands of books in here,
Hunt said, surveying the towering shelves.
Oh, yes, Lahaba said, but half of this is also Jessica's private collection. Some of the books date all the way back to...
Ahem, Bryce said. Lahaba stuck out her tongue and said in a conspiratorial whisper to Hunt.
Bibi is cranky because she hasn't been able to make her list.
I'm cranky because I'm hungry and you've been a pain in my ass all morning. Lahaba floated off Hunt's finger to rush to her table, where she plopped on her doll's couch and said to the angel, who looked torn between wincing and laughing,
Bibi pretends to be mean, but she's a softie. She bought Ciri because Jessica was going to gift him to a warlord client in the Farkin Mountains?
Lahaba?
It's true.
Hunt examined the various tanks throughout the room and the assortment of reptiles within them, then the empty waters of the massive aquarium.
I thought he was some designer pet.
Oh, he is, Lahaba said. Syrinx was stolen from his mother as a cub, then traded for 10 years around the world. Then Jessica bought him to be her pet. Then Bryce bought him. His freedom, I mean. She even had proof of his freedom certified. No one can ever buy him again.
She pointed to the chimera.
You can't see it with him lying down like that, but he's got the freed brand on his front right paw, the official C and everything.
Hunt twisted from the gloomy water to look Bryce over. She crossed her arms. What? You did the assuming. His eyes flickered. Whatever the fuck that meant. She tried not to look at his own wrist, though, the SPQM stamped there. She wondered if he was resisting the same urge, if he was contemplating whether he'd ever get that C one day. But then Lahaba said to Hunt,
"How much do you cost to buy, Athy?"
Bryce cut in, "Lily, that's rude.
And don't call him Athy."
She sent up a puff of smoke.
"He and I are of the same house and are both slaves. My great-grandmother fought in his 18th Legion during their rebellion. I am allowed to ask."
Hunt's face wholly shuddered at the mention of the rebellion, but he approached the couch, let Searing sniff his fingers, then scratched the beast behind his velvety ears. Searing let out a low growl of pleasure, his lion's tail going limp. Bryce tried to block out the squeezing sensation in her chest at the sight of it. Hunt's wings rustled.
"I was sold to Micah for 85 million gold marks."
Bryce's heel snagged on the carpet as she reached Lahaba's little station and grabbed the tablet. Lahaba again floated over to the angel.
"I cost 90,000 gold marks,"
Lahaba confided.
"Siri was 233,000 gold marks."
Hunt's eyes snapped to Bryce.
"You paid that?"
Bryce sat at the work table and pointed to the empty chair beside hers. Hunt followed obediently for once.
"I got a 15% employee discount, and we came to an arrangement."
Let that be that, until Lahaba declared,
"Jessica takes some out of each paycheck."
Bryce growled, reining in the instinct to smother the sprite with a pillow.
"Bibi will be paying it off until she's 300, unless she doesn't make the drop. Then she'll die first."
Hunt dropped into his seat, his wing brushing her arm. Softer than velvet, smoother than silk. He snapped it in tight at the touch, as if he couldn't bear the contact.
"Why?"
Bryce said, "Because that warlord wanted to hurt and break him until he was a fighting beast. And Syrinx is my friend, and I was sick of losing friends."
"I thought you were loaded."
"Nope."
She finished the word on a popping noise. Hunt's brow furrowed.
"But your apartment."
"The apartment is Danica's." Bryce couldn't meet his gaze. "She bought it as an investment, had its ownership written in our names. I didn't even know it existed until after she died. And I would have just sold it, but it had top-notch security and grade A enchantments."
"I get it,"
he said again. And she shrank from the kindness in his eyes, the pity. Danica had died, and she was alone, and Bryce couldn't breathe. She'd refused to go to therapy. Her mother had set up appointment after appointment for the first year, and Bryce had bailed on all of them. She'd bought herself an aromatherapy diffuser, had read up on breathing techniques, and that had been that. She knew she should have gone. Therapy helped so many people, saved so many lives. Juniper had been seeing a therapist since she was a teenager and would tell anyone who would listen about how vital and brilliant it was. But Bryce hadn't shown up. Not because she didn't believe it would work. No, she knew it would work and help and probably make her feel better, or at least give her the tools to try to do so. That was precisely why she hadn't gone. From the way Hunt was staring at her, she wondered if he knew it, realized why she blew out a long breath.
"Look toward where it hurts the most."
Fucker. The Viper Queen could go to hell with her pro tips. She turned on Lahaba's electronic tablet. The screen revealed a vampire and wolf tangled in each other, groaning, naked. Bryce laughed. "You stopped watching in the middle of this to come bother me, Lily?" The air in the room lightened, as if Bryce's sorrow had cracked at the sight of the wolf pounding into the moaning vampire female. Lahaba burned ruby.
"I wanted to meet Athy,"
she muttered, slinking back to her couch. Hunt, as if despite himself, chuckled.
"You watch Fangs and Bangs?"
Lahaba shot upright.
"That is not what it's called. Did you tell him to say that, Bryce?"
Bryce bit her lip to keep from laughing, and grabbed her laptop instead, bringing up her emails with Tertian on the screen.
No, I didn't.
Hunt raised a brow with that wary amusement.
I'm taking a nap with Siri,
Lahapa declared to no one in particular. Almost as soon as she said it, something heavy thumped on the mezzanine. Hunt's hand went to his side, presumably for the gun there, but Lahapa hissed toward the railing,
Do not interrupt my nap.
A heavy slithering filled the library, followed by a thump and rustle. It didn't come from Miss Poppy's tank. Lahapa said to Hunt,
Don't let the book sweet-talk you into taking them home.
He threw her a half-smile. You're doing a fine job ensuring that doesn't happen. Lahapa beamed, curling along Syrinx's side. He purred with delight at her warmth.
They'll do anything to get out of here. Sneak into your bag, the pocket of your coat, even flop up the stairs. They're desperate to get into the world again.
She flowed toward the distant shelves behind them, where a book had landed on the steps.
Bad,
she seethed. Hunt's hand slid within easy reach of the knife at his thigh as the book, as if carried by invisible hands, drifted up the steps, floated to the shelf, and found its place again, humming once with golden light, as if in annoyance. Lahapa cast a warning simmer toward it, then wrapped Syrinx's tail around herself like a fur shawl. Bryce shook her head, but a sidelong glance told her that Hunt was now staring at her. Not in the way that males tended to stare at her. He said,
What's up with all the little critters?
They're Jessica's former lovers and rivals,
Lahapa whispered from her fur blanket. Hunt's wings rustled.
I'd heard the rumors.
I've never seen her transform anyone into an animal, Bryce said. But I try to stay on her good side. I'd really prefer not to be turned into a pig if Jessica gets pissed at me for fucking up a deal. Hunt's lips twitched upward, as if caught between amusement and horror. Lahapa opened her mouth, presumably to tell Hunt all the names she'd given the creatures in the library, but Bryce cut her off, saying to Hunt,
I called you because I started to make that list of all of Danica's movements during her final days.
She patted the page she'd started writing on.
Yeah?
His dark eyes remained on her face. Bryce cleared her throat and admitted,
It's, hard to make myself remember. I thought, maybe you could ask me some questions, help get the memories flowing.
Okay.
Silence rippled again, as she waited for him to remind her that time wasn't on their side, that he had a fucking job to do and she shouldn't be such a wimp, blah, blah. But Hunt surveyed the books, the tanks, the door to the bathroom at the back of the space, the lights high above disguised like stars painted across the ceiling. And then, rather than ask her about Danica, he said,
Did you study antiquities at school?
I took a few classes, yeah. I liked learning about old crap. I was a classical literature major.
She added, I learned the old language of the Fae when I was a kid. She taught herself out of a sudden interest in learning more about her heritage. When she'd gone to her father's house a year later, for the first time in her life, she'd hoped to use it to impress him. After everything went to shit, she'd refused to learn another language. Childish, but she didn't care. Though knowing the most ancient of the Fae languages had been helpful for this job, at least, for the few Fae antiquities that weren't hoarded in their glittering troves. Hunt again surveyed the space.
How'd you get this job?
After I graduated, I couldn't get a job anywhere. The museums didn't want me because I didn't have enough experience, and the other art galleries in town were run by creeps who thought I was appetizing.
His eyes darkened, and she made herself ignore the rage she beheld there on her behalf.
But my friend Fury,
Hunt stiffened slightly at the name. He clearly knew her reputation.
Well, she and Jessica worked together in Pangera at some point, and when Jessica mentioned that she needed a new assistant, Fury basically shoved my resume down her throat.
Bryce snorted at the memory.
Jessica offered me the job because she didn't want an uptight priss. The work is too dirty, customers too shady. She needed someone with social skills as well as a little background in ancient art. And that was that. Hunt considered, then asked,
"What's your deal with Fury Axtar?"
"She's in Pangera, doing what Fury does best."
It wasn't really an answer.
"Axtar ever tell you what she gets up to over there?"
"No, and I like it to stay that way. My dad told me enough stories about what it's like. I don't enjoy imagining what Fury sees and deals with.
Blood and mud and death. Science versus magic, machines versus Vanir, bombs of chemicals and first light, bullets and fangs."
Randall's own service had been mandatory, a condition of life for any non-lower in the Peregrini class. All humans had to serve in the military for 3 years. Randall had never said it, but she'd always known the years on the front had left deep scars beyond those visible on him.
Being forced to kill your own kind was no small task. But the Asteri's threat remained. Should any refuse, their lives would be forfeit, and then the lives of their families.
Any survivors would be slaves, their wrists forever inked with the same letters that marred Hunt's skin.
"There's no chance Danica's murderer might have been connected to..."
"No," Bryce growled. She and Fury might be totally fucked up right now, but she knew that. Fury's enemies weren't Danica's enemies. Once Briggs was behind bars, she bailed.
Bryce hadn't seen her since. Searching for anything to change the topic, Bryce asked,
"How old are you?"
233.
She did the math, frowning. "You were that young when you rebelled? And already commanded a legion?"
The Angel's failed rebellion had been 200 years ago. He'd have been incredibly young, by Vanir standards, to have led it.
"My gifts made me invaluable to people."
He held up a hand, lightning writhing around his fingers.
"Too good at killing."
She grunted her agreement. Hunt eyed her.
"You ever killed before?"
"Yes."
Surprise lit his eyes, but she didn't want to go into it. What had happened with Danica senior year that had left them both in the hospital, her arm shattered, and a stolen motorcycle little more than scrap. Lahaba cut in from across the library.
"Bibi, stop being cryptic. I've wanted to know for years, Athi, but she never tells me anything good."
"Leave it, Lahaba."
The memories of that trip pelted her. Danica's smiling face in the hospital bed beside hers. How Thorne carried Danica up the stairs of their dorm when they got home, despite her protests. How the pack had fussed over them for a week, Natalie and Zelda kicking the males out one night so they could have a girls-only movie fest. But none of it had compared to what had changed between her and Danica on that trip. The final barrier that had fallen. The truth laid bare.
"I love you, Bryce. I'm so sorry."
"Close your eyes, Danica."
A hole tore open in her chest, gaping and howling. Lahaba was still grousing, but Hunt was watching Bryce's face. He asked,
"What's one happy memory you have with Danica from the last week of her life?"
Her blood pounded through her entire body.
I have a lot of them from that week."
"Pick one, and we'll start with that."
"Is this how you get witnesses to talk?"
He leaned back in his seat, wings adjusting around its low back.
"It's how you and I are going to make this list."
She weighed his stare, his solid, thrumming presence. She swallowed.
"The tattoo on my back. She and I got it done that week. We got stupid drunk one night, and I was so out of it I didn't even know what the fuck she put on my back until I'd gotten over my hangover."
His lips twitched.
"I hope it was something good, at least."
Her chest ached, but she smiled.
"It was."
Hunt sat forward and tapped the paper.
"Write it down."
She did. He asked,
"What did Danica do during that day before you got the tattoo?"
The question was calm, but he weighed her every movement,
as if he were reading something, assessing something that she couldn't see. Eager to avoid that too aware look, Bryce picked up the pen and began writing, one memory after another, kept writing her recollections of Danica's whereabouts that week. That silly wish on the old square gate, the pizza she and Danica had devoured while standing at the counter of the shop, swigging from bottles of beer and talking shit. The hair salon where Bryce flipped through gossip magazines while Danica had gotten her purple, blue, and pink streaks touched up. The grocery store two blocks down, where she and Thorne had found Danica stuffing her face with a bag of chips she hadn't yet paid for, and teased her for hours afterward. The CCU Sunball Arena, where she and Danica had ogled the hot players on Ethan's team during practice and called dibs on them. She kept writing and writing until the walls pressed in again. Her knee bounced relentlessly beneath the table.
I think we can stop there for today.
Hunt opened his mouth, glancing to the list, but her phone buzzed. Thanking Erd for the well-timed intervention, Bryce glanced at the message on the screen and scowled. The expression was apparently intriguing enough that Hunt peered over her shoulder. Rune had written, "Meet me at Luna's temple in 30 minutes. Hunt asked, "Think it's got to do with last night?" Bryce didn't answer as she typed back, "Why?" Rune replied, "Because it's one of the few places in this city without cameras."
"Interesting," she murmured. "You think I should give him a heads up that you're coming?"
Hunt's grin was pure wickedness.
"Hell no."
Bryce couldn't keep herself from grinning back.
Chapter 21.
Rune Dannon leaned against one of the marble pillars of the inner sanctum of Luna's temple and waited for his sister to arrive. Tourists drifted past, snapping photos, none marking his presence, thanks to the shadow veil he'd pulled around himself. The chamber was long, its ceiling lofty. It had to be to accommodate the statue enthroned at the back. 30 feet high, Luna sat in a carved golden throne, the goddess lovingly rendered in shimmering moonstone. A silver tiara of a full moon held by two crescent ones graced her upswept curling hair. At her sandaled feet lay twin wolves, their baleful eyes daring any pilgrim to come closer. Across the back of her throne, a bow of solid gold had been slung, its quiver full of silver arrows. The pleats of her thigh-length robe draped across her lap, veiling the slim fingers resting there. Both wolves and fae claimed Luna as their patron goddess, had gone to war over whom she favored in millennia long past, and while the wolves' connection to her had been carved into the statue with stunning detail, the nod to the fae had been missing for 2 years. Maybe the Autumn King had a point about restoring the fae to glory. Not in the haughty, sneering way his father intended, but the lack of fae heritage on the statue raked down Rune's nerves. Footsteps scuffed in the courtyard beyond the sanctum doors, followed by excited whispers and the click of cameras.
"The courtyard itself is modeled after the one in the Eternal City," a female voice was saying, as a new flock of tourists entered the temple, trailing their guide like ducklings.
And at the rear of the group, a wine-red head of hair, and a too recognizable pair of gray wings. Rune gritted his teeth, keeping hidden in the shadows. At least she'd shown up. The tour group stopped in the center of the inner sanctum, the guide speaking loudly as everyone spread out, cameras flashing like Athalar's lightning in the gloom.
"And here it is, folks, the statue of Luna herself. Lunathian's patron goddess was crafted from a single block of marble hewn from the famed Calyprian quarries by the Melanthos River up north. This temple was the first thing built upon the city's founding 500 years ago. The location of this city was selected precisely because of the way the Istros River bends through the land. Can anyone tell me what shape the river makes?"
"A crescent,"
someone called out, the words echoing off the marble pillars, wending through the curling smoke from the bowl of incense laid between the wolves at the goddess's feet. Rune saw Bryce and Hunt scan the sanctum for him,
and he let the shadows peel back long enough for them to spy his location. Bryce's face revealed nothing. Athalar just grinned. Fan-fucking-tastic. With all the tourists focused on their guide, no one noticed the unusual pair crossing the space. Rune kept the shadows at bay until Bryce and Hunt reached him, and then willed them to encompass them as well. Hunt just said, "Fancy trick." Bryce said nothing. Rune tried not to remember how delighted she'd once been whenever he'd demonstrated how his shadows and starlight worked. Both halves of his power working as one. Rune said to her, "I asked you to come, not him." Bryce linked her arm through Athalar's, the portrait they painted laughable. Bryce in her fancy work dress and heels, the angel in his black battle suit.
"We're joined at the hip now, unfortunately for you. Best friends."
"The best,"
Hunt echoed, his grin unfading. "Luna, shoot him dead. This would not end well." Bryce nodded to the tour group still trailing their leader through the temple.
"This place might not have any cameras, but they do."
"They're focused on their guide," Rune said, "and the noise they're making will mask any conversation we have."
The shadows could only hide him from sight, not sound.
Through thin ripples in the shadows, they could make out a young couple edging around the statue, so busy snapping photos they didn't note the denser bit of darkness in the far corner. But Rune fell silent, and Bryce and Athalar followed suit. As they waited for the couple to pass, the tour guide went on.
"We'll dive more into the architectural wonders of the Inner Sanctum in a minute, but let's direct our attention to the statue. The quiver, of course, is real gold. The arrow's pure silver with tips of diamond."
Someone let out an appreciative whistle.
"Indeed," the tour guide agreed. "They were donated by the Archangel Micah, who is a patron and investor in various charities, foundations, and innovative companies."
The tour guide went on.
"Unfortunately, 2 years ago, the third of Luna's treasures was stolen from this temple. Can anyone tell me what it was?"
"The horn,"
someone said.
"It was all over the news."
"It was a terrible theft, an artifact that cannot be replaced easily."
The couple moved on, and Rune uncrossed his arms. Hunt said,
"All right, Dannon, get to the point. Why'd you ask Bryce to come?"
Rune gestured to where the tourists were snapping photos of the goddess's hand, specifically the fingers now curled around air, where a cracked ivory hunting horn had once lain.
"Because I was tasked by the Autumn King to find Luna's horn."
Athalar angled his head, but Bryce snorted.
"Is that why you asked about it last night?"
They were interrupted again by the tour guide saying, as she moved toward the rear of the room,
"If you'll follow me, we've been granted special permission to see the chamber where the stag sacrifices are prepared to be burned in Luna's honor."
Through the murky shadows, Bryce could make out a small door opening in the wall. When they'd filtered out, Hunt asked, eyes narrowing,
"What is the horn, exactly?"
"A bunch of fairy tale bullcrap," Bryce muttered.
"You really dragged me here for this? To what? Help you impress your daddy?"
Growling, Rune pulled out his phone, making sure the